Blakeman, our Senate Committee on Education, and today is March 17th. Actually, it's also St. Patrick's Day, and it's nice to see that there's a lot of people in the audience that recognize that. My hat's being used in another room because there's two rooms of us now watching this hearing. And since they saw kids getting some chocolate here, they figured that they should get chocolate there. So we sent that over to them, and they borrowed my hat. We are going to change the there was different orders that have been posted. This order is that we're going to start out with Senate Bill 612, or as I used to always say, and she laughed at me the other day, but she got a couple emails about 216. And all the kids will know that. But as many people in the legislature know, I am a dyslexic human being myself. I'm also ADHD, so it added a lot of experiences for my kids, my teachers in the early years, and my parents, and I am eternally grateful to all of them. We're going to take testimony first from Senator Edwards, because we do this. Our colleagues have a lot of places they have to be, so we actually have them come first. So Senator Edwards and Representative Taylor and Representative Hoyle. I know Hoyle. That's right. Yeah, you're an important person on the other side.
According to Hoyle.
Well, and also an important person, a majority leader and everything, coming over here. So. With that,
Mr. Chair, according to Hoyle, is conditional.
Yes, according to Hoyle, yes.
Not in my mind.
And she has things to say about the first person to testify, but I won't repeat what she says about him. She can do that herself if she wants, and I don't need to embarrass him before he speaks. But with that, we will have testimony from Senator Edwards.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Roblin. Did you open up a public hearing?
I thought we opened a public hearing on 612.
I'm just
I wasn't
just
quite sure either. So now we have.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards, state senator from Eugene, also representing Junction City in the state Senate. I'm coming here to testify in support of Senate Bill 612, the dyslexia screening and supports bill. And I will be brief because I don't want to take time with more impactful time of folks that have more impactful testimony than I. I come to this issue as somebody that has worked on issues of developmental disabilities much more than learning disabilities. As a member of the Autism Commission, many of you know that I've spent a lot of time in my legislative career working on those issues. And it's interesting because, as much as I've worked on early identification and early interventions for those type of kids, it's amazing how and as lacking as the supports are for those kids, oftentimes it's easier to identify them, and we have a whole system in place and we know what to do with them and it is so important to identify early kids with dyslexia so that appropriate instructional interventions can be implemented and really change the trajectory for kids. So I've always said that oftentimes it feels like our education system as a system is designed to have a whole lot of round holes, and some kids are more kind of square pegs, and the only way that you can get that square peg into that round hole is with brute force and damage. And it kind of feels that way for some of us when we're trying to meet the needs of kids that that learn differently, that process information differently, but are no less talented, no less gifted. And in fact, I think particularly on the issue of dyslexia, we could call it, the gift of dyslexia. And there are so many remarkable leaders that are affected by dyslexia themselves. But I will abbreviate my testimony at that and pass it on to others.
Representative.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Well, first of all, I think we need to have a big thank you to all of these lovely people who came here today. Can everyone raise their hand who's here with decoding dyslexia? And then I believe you said we have overflow rooms?
Yep.
I think this in itself shows what a huge important issue it is. And for those of us who have spent time in the building down here.
Go identify yourself to them.
I'm sorry, Kathleen Taylor, House District 41, State Representative. For those of us in the spend a lot of time in the building know that we don't always have this type of turnout. So I think it speaks volume about how serious of an issue that this is. So I wanted to talk specifically about Senate Bill 612, and of course, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. And what this bill does is it particularly pertains to the screening of students for dyslexia. Senate Bill 612 requires school districts to screen students for risk factors for dyslexia and requires that staff members of the district receive training related to dyslexia. So that's what the bill is specifically about. Dyslexia is a specific learning disability that is characterized by difficulties with accurate or fluent word recognition and by poor spelling and decoding abilities. Secondary consequences may include problems with reading comprehension and a reduced reading experience that can impede the growth of vocabulary and background knowledge. Dyslexia is widespread. Research conducted by the National Institute of Health indicates that as many as 1 in 5 individuals struggle with dyslexia and related learning disabilities. As my constituent, Jen Capalanga, who's here in the front row with her two lovely sons, Danny and Garrett, and the advocates at Decoding Dyslexia can personally attest, one of the keys to helping our students with dyslexia become successful in schools is early detection. Studies have shown that when intervention is delayed until third grade, approximately 74% of children will continue to have difficulty learning to read through high school. When we consider that over 38% of children with learning disabilities drop out of high school and that the estimated cost of illiteracy to businesses and taxpayers is $20 billion annually, we see how important the early detection of dyslexia can be in reaching state educational goals and fostering a strong workforce. Oregon is not alone in working to help students by enacting statewide dyslexia laws. If Senate Bill 612 were to be signed into law today, it would join 18 states that already have dyslexia laws and the approximately 12 states that are considering dyslexia laws. My comments are intended to be brief to give time to the advocates from Decoding Dyslexia, who will explain the details of Senate Bill 612. Thank you. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, or my leader, Representative Val Hoyle.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator Roblin, members of the committee, for listening to this bill today. My name is Val Hoyle. I'm the state representative from House District 14, West Eugene and Junction City. And I'm here to ask you to support Senate Bill 612. And I want to tell you why it's important. Senate Bill 612 would give schools and teachers the tools to recognize and diagnose dyslexia and visual processing disorders so that they can learn how to teach children. We talk a lot about testing and high-stakes testing, and as someone who does not test well, I can tell you that the way we test does not necessarily tell us what a child knows. But if we can have screening when a child is in first grade and understand what their issues are and how they learn and give that information back to teachers, then teachers can teach children in the way that they learn. When my daughter was in kindergarten, we lived in Wisconsin, and she had access to occupational therapy 3 days a week because she has dysgraphia and some visual processing issues. When we came here in first grade, she was in first grade, we were told that she was just above the line, and if in third grade she was still having trouble recognizing her letters, that they would deal with it then. What we know is by the time a child is in third grade, they're either a learner or not. And so to address these issues in third grade means that a child would be much less likely to graduate from college or potentially graduate from high school. So having the screening early is essential. I'm dyslexic, and I didn't find out what the problem was until I was 46 and in this building. What I knew was, what I felt was that I just wasn't as smart as everybody else. In second grade, my teacher, I remember Sister Marie Louise, put a turtle up on the wall with my name on it because I couldn't write and finish the assignments as fast as the other kids. I am 51, and I remember that. In seventh grade, the first time we would have to stand up and do a spelling bee, and I remember the first time I didn't come in last. I came in second to last, and everyone clapped. And when we were prepped for math tests and college prep classes, the teacher would tell me to put my head on the desk because I wasn't college material, because I wasn't smart enough. That's what I heard. I stopped trying. I stopped going to classes. I stopped going to school. This runs in families. My sister stayed back in second grade, and she dropped out of high school. Eventually got her GED, but the second in 11th grade, the second time through, it took me 5 years to graduate from high school. I was in the resource room, and a teacher said, you know, let's sign you up for college prep classes. And I said to her what I heard so many times, I'm not college material. I'm not smart enough for that. And she said, you're plenty smart. You just learn differently. You have to work harder. So I knew I had to work harder, and I can work hard. And then there was an advent of something that was so great, and that's the word processor, which, you know, you all have this now. But it meant that I didn't have to type out a page. You know what it's like to have to retype a page because you can't get the first paragraph right? And I didn't want to tell anyone because I was ashamed, and I just thought I wasn't smart enough. So I made it through college, and I took political science because it was the only major that I didn't have to take math. I had to take one math class, Algebra 1, and it took me three times to get through. So, you know, if it weren't for that, you know, I wouldn't be here. I'd be doing something else. I didn't go to law school because I was afraid of taking the LSATs, and I didn't think that I could do it. I ended up in a job in sales, doing international sales in the outdoor industry. It was fantastic, and I could do currency exchanges in my head. But my expense report, it would take me 5 hours to do an expense report because of the numbers. But I never wanted to tell anybody. I was ashamed. So when I got appointed to this position, I was trying to read the bills. And I remember trying to read a bill in my committee. And I read the first page 18 times, and I couldn't get it. And I burst into tears and called a friend of mine, Judge Ann Aiken, who works with the reentry program. And I said, I can't do this. I'm not smart enough. I can't read the bills. And I don't want anybody to know that I'm not smart enough. And she said, you're plenty smart. Go and see this woman I work with, Diane Hochstein. She does testing. And I did. And she said that I recognize letters at the level of a second grader. I don't see all the letters. She said, you see three quarters of the letters. And here's what you can do to make it so that you can read better. And she said, you read people, and what you need to do is make sure that the letters are big enough, that you have summaries, that you can talk things through, and these are the accommodations you can use. And when she did that, I actually could read. I could read the things that were in front of me. I could understand, and for the first time in my life, at 46, I didn't feel like I wasn't smart enough to be in the rooms that I was in. And I've been in a lot of rooms. I mean, I was the chairperson of the Export Council. I've been, you know, lead salesperson, and I've had a successful business career, but I've always felt like somebody was gonna find out, tap me on the shoulder and say, you don't belong here because you're not as smart as anyone else. And I don't feel that way. But that was at 46. That should have been in first grade. If that had happened in first grade, then who knows where I could be. But I feel like, in my belief, is that God has a plan for me, and I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I'm here because I need to be that voice. I need to be that voice for every kid who really is smart enough but just learns differently. And so if we can save, you know, we would save a lot of money if we could just find out how children learn and if we give them the tools to help them achieve their potential. I have the wherewithal and the resources to ensure that my daughter got the help she needed, but what about our other kids? Why, if we're going to test them, why not test them for how they learn? So then we can make sure that every child in Oregon exceeds the expectations that they have for themselves. And I don't think any child should ever think that they're not smart enough just because they learn differently. So please support this bill.
Any questions? Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I will agree that this time, according to Hoyle, is right. Representative, thank you for your testimony on this. One regret I have is I'm not a sponsor of the bill, but that can be fixed.
You can change that.
We can fix that. I have people that are very close to me that have gone through the same thing, and I want to just broaden it just a little bit. Fully supportive of this, Senator Edwards, the work you've been doing with the autism spectrum and trying to get the testing there is absolutely essential. But I just, especially Representative Hoyle, because you are majority leader in the House, okay? Vision and hearing screening at the beginning of school. I mean, you know, there's things we can be doing for our kids to make sure that they have the assets in place when they start the system. And I think we need to be focused on that big picture of all of those things that are available and doable that we should be doing on the front end. This is a piece of it, so thank you for that.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much.
Any other? Yes, Senator Bearsugar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoyle, I don't know how to tell you this, but you've obviously came a long ways in, and you are plenty smart.
Thank you.
And I just want to say, Val and I have talked about this stuff a lot since we share this problem. I actually came along faster in math, so math was my saving grace in school. But we have very similar events in our lives, and I'm sure that there's a lot of kids out here who have very similar events, being the last person, the first person to sit down in every spelling bee in fourth and fifth grade, not getting recesses because I couldn't read and do stuff fast enough, and all of those different kinds of issues. And it takes a lot to put that out in front of people, and I really appreciate that you found out and you were able to do that, Val. I found out earlier in my life, and I was able to do that when I was a school principal, to go to classrooms and talk to kids, and we could get an instant bond because we knew what the other person was feeling like. We may not have exactly the same visual impairment. And I started going, because I had really good teachers who knew there was something wrong, going to eye exams in the big city of Seattle from the time I was in second grade, because everything I did went the wrong direction. And so they always said I had an eye problem, and they sent me to doctors, and they said my eyes are perfect, and I'd come back, and then the next one would send me to the eye doctor, because we didn't know. And it is really sad that we now know. My younger brother, because it goes in families, went to a special school when I was in college at the Gillingham Method in Renton, Washington, which saved his life with respect to school. So we know that there are things we can do. And I, coming in front of it and sharing your story with people is really tough, and I really appreciate it. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. Next we have, right here, Senator Haas. No. Did you want to say something?
I could never improve on what's been said in the last half an hour.
Yes. Okay.
So now we go to Jen Capelonga, Morgan Bolson, and Eric Schultz.
Okay. Left to right.
Yeah, we're going to try. This panel, we maybe not. The next one, after this panel, we're going to use the 3-minute or 2-minute quick time because we've got a lot of people to get through. So, and we want everybody. So keep it as close as you can. But they were the one. You were the ones that were told us to at the beginning that were the experts. So you get a little longer. We're not going to do that for you. So, but you are the top of the list. But we'll go on down the list and we'll see if we can keep under a fairly good time limit. So thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Capelonga, and I'm a parent, educator, and member of the Decoding Dyslexia community. And I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 612. Most of us have heard about the term dyslexia, so it's shocking to realize that as a state, we have no real plan to address dyslexia. The National Institutes of Health studies that are replicated, independent, and longitudinal say 1 in 5 individuals is affected with dyslexia. That's roughly 113,000 K-12 students in Oregon schools with dyslexia. At Decoding Dyslexia, we receive emails and calls from people from Bend to Burns, Talent to Tiger to Tillamook, Pendleton to Portland. There isn't an area of the state that doesn't escape the repercussions of our school system not addressing dyslexia. Affluent families who live close enough to tutors provide those services, but many don't or can't, and this is a real equity issue. Because the state of Oregon has no real strategy to address the learning needs of these bright and capable learners, information about dyslexia identification and intervention is almost completely absent from teacher preparation programs. That means that teachers are not prepared to teach 20% of their students to read and write. This is true despite the fact that screening is easily implemented and our teachers want these tools. Recently, Portland Public Schools and the Salem-Keizer schools have started in servicing their teachers on dyslexia. Approximately 200 teachers have gone through 3.5 to 6 hour trainings. Nearly 100% of them say that they think it's important information for all teachers. And after these long trainings, nearly 90% of them want even more training. As a regular education science teacher with a special education credentials, I had hundreds of students who displayed all the red flags of dyslexia, and it was heartbreaking to watch them fall through the cracks. As a parent of a student with dyslexia, it's maddening that I hadn't taught my program how to teach him to read and write. And even though I teach a class titled Special Education for General Education Teachers, I've been unable to compel his school to provide him with the free appropriate public education that he's entitled to. Instead, we pay for private tutoring. I'm not alone in my lack of training. Decade after decade of research shows teachers are not getting the training to teach these students how to read and write. Today, we heard from legislators and we'll hear from students, teachers, parents, and professionals. Dyslexia touches many, and the personal and societal costs of ignoring this learning difference are huge. I urge you to support Senate Bill 612. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, committee. My name is Morgan Bolson. Thank you for having me here. I might appear a little nervous, but I did practice my speech in front of my students this morning, and they said the only thing that can make it better is if I add their names, Damian, Lenny, Casey. So there you go. I've been a special education teacher for 10 years, and I work directly with students and teachers on a daily basis. I'm a national board certified teacher. I've taught in 3 different school districts from rural to urban settings. Throughout my undergraduate and graduate programs, I've received no training in strategies in teaching students with dyslexia. Out of my own necessity, I've personally pursued further information for effective strategies. I've spent thousands of dollars of my own money and time in order to do this, and I still need to learn more. What I found in teaching is that some kids come to school with a solid foundation, ready to learn, and then some don't, and those are usually our dyslexic students. I found that all teachers know what to do when kids come with that solid foundation that I call phonemic awareness. It's important to know that this foundation has nothing to do with how well the parent has prepped their child for school, has nothing to do with their socioeconomic status, their race, or their ethnicity. It has to do with if the child has a phonemic awareness skills needed for emergent reading. Our teachers were fantastic. We're ready to teach kids that have that solid foundation. But when kids lack that phonemic awareness and that foundation, we don't have the right knowledge to build on that. As the only teacher in my school with training for teaching students with dyslexia, oftentimes my colleagues, general education and special education teachers, come to me asking me for help for strategies. I struggle to give them support and also manage my own caseload as a special education teacher. Teachers need more than a brainstorming session, and I need more as well. They need more than I can give them. Oftentimes, when a student doesn't come to school with a solid foundation, that child ends up with me in special education. Unfortunately, that's a wait to fail model. So I don't usually test kids until they're 2 or 3 years behind. And at that time, they're in second or third grade. And they're already feeling like a failure at that point. In order to make gains with my kids, they need to make over a year's growth every year when they haven't made hardly any growth up until when they sit at my table. So that's just a lofty goal for my kids. And that's just frustrating when research shows that we can effectively screen for dyslexia as early as age 5 and a half with 92% accuracy. There are a number of viable screening options for dyslexia. We're already mandated by ODE to conduct a kindergarten screening. Adding a few simple assessments to screen for indicators of dyslexia will require minimal additional support and resources and would provide our teachers and our schools with tremendous information. Additionally, more training for our hardworking and caring teachers who want to help would give us the tools we need to help our students succeed. So thank you for your support of Bill 612.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Eric Schultz. My son is a sophomore at Tualatin High School, and he is dyslexic, and I'm here speaking on behalf of him in support of Senate Bill 612. It's said that knowledge is power, and our family could not agree more, because our 16-year-old son's journey through elementary, middle, and high school exemplifies how knowledge concerning the disability called dyslexia can be powerful and can impact children in the state of Oregon. Our son's learning disability went undetected through elementary and middle school. Every teacher knew something wasn't quite right. Some labeled him as gifted, almost as if he was too smart to learn like the rest of us. Others labeled him as lazy or a slacker because he could not keep up with the assignments or follow written directions. Essentially, every teacher told us our kid was very smart, but that he just wasn't applying himself. Pardon me. Once our son began high school, things changed dramatically. He repeated whole classes. We got calls from teachers stating that he wasn't getting his homework turned in on time, and his grades actually dropped by a full letter grade almost overnight. So we didn't know what to do. We met with his guidance counselor, all of his teachers. We even met with the high school principal. We hired tutors for math, spelling, and writing. And despite this, teachers continued to label him as immature, not ready for high school, and one teacher even called him a squirrel. Not sure what she meant, but she called him a squirrel. No one could tell us what was going on. Really, all they could do was offer labels. So out of desperation, we took our son to a well-known children's psychology program in Portland. We wanted them to analyze him, and we asked them. We said, are there emotional problems going on here? Is he being bullied at school? Is he drinking? Is he drugging? Does he have a learning disability? Really, what's going on? And what we didn't know was that that last question about a learning disability would be prophetic. From the hours of assessments the psychologist conducted with our son, we learned that he was very healthy, but that he was dyslexic. And without any academic therapy at all, he had self-developed the reading and writing skills necessary to get him through elementary and middle school, but that once he hit high school, he just couldn't keep up. So really, you know, the question is, how does a student make it to high school without being recognized as dyslexic? A student like our son is able to read at a seventh grade level and write at a fifth grade level as a sophomore. That means that he can read well enough to get the general meaning of text so teachers can think he understands what's going on, but he misses most of the details that are in the writing. So really, he's a good enough reader and writer to get by. Our family was, of course, shocked but relieved to find out what we found out. We finally had an explanation for what was going on. And for the first time, we felt like we truly understood our son. We knew him. We had been empowered. Had Senate Bill 612 been in place when our son was in kindergarten, we all could have been empowered much earlier. He would have been screened for dyslexia before he finished first grade. His phonological processing and letter sound recognition would have been recognized as being much lower than the other students in his class. He would have been referred for further assessment and been diagnosed as dyslexic while he was still learning to read. This would have made a profound difference on our son, especially at school. His teachers and parents could have created an educational plan that would have taught him how to work with his disability early on so that his language skills would be on par with his peers all the way into the future. However, without Senate Bill 612, our son was left to battle his learning disability alone. He was labeled by teachers as lazy, a slacker, and a student who didn't pay attention to details. All of these labels were absolutely incorrect. He didn't have the one label that really mattered, dyslexic. All of us could have been empowered by the knowledge of his learning disorder, but we weren't. We need to make a change in Oregon today. It is not okay for other students to share our son's experience. no student should be labeled as a slacker when there are identifiable reasons for their struggle. It is time to require reading and screening for dyslexia when children are learning to read. It is time to educate our educators about a learning disability that affects as many as 1 in 10 of the students in their classes. It is time to empower students, their parents, and our teachers with the knowledge that will help our children. So our family urges you to support Senate Bill 612 in its current form. We urge you to pass it out of your committee so that your colleagues in the legislature can support it too. We urge you to take up the fight of my son and every student like him and make the changes that Oregon so desperately needs. Knowledge is power, and our family urges you to empower the students, families, and teachers of Oregon by supporting Senate Bill 612. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions, so thank you very much for being here. Next, we're going to have Gavin Isley, Will Andrews, and Teresa Morrell. Hopefully I got some of those names right. You can start.
Hi.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, my name is Gavin. I'm in fifth grade at Guptor Elementary in Kaiser. I would like to tell you a little bit about my dyslexia. Reading is kind of hard for me sometimes. I can't remember the right words for things. Dyslexia makes school harder for me, and sometimes it is stressful and embarrassing. Here are some things I want you to know. I am not stupid or lazy. Sometimes I need extra time to get things done. It might take me extra tries to get it, but when I do, it sticks and I remember it. I try my best, but sometimes I get really frustrated and I need teachers to be patient with me. I like to work in a quiet room because noises can be distracting. I may be dyslexic, but I can shine in many other ways. I'm super good at math. I like science, and I am a self-manager at school. Senate Bill 212 is important because it will make sure the teachers know how to help dyslexic students like me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're probably going to put the timer on now. I will be a little bit with the kids, but just so people know, if the red light comes up, that is when the time is over, and it'll give you a little bit of warning. So, okay.
Okay. My name is Teresa Sorensen. I live in Happy Valley, and I'm the parent of two dyslexic children with very different stories. My older daughter, Lillian, struggled through kindergarten with the beginning skills that are required to learn to read. She had difficulty recognizing letters and applying the correct sound to them. Her spelling was rudimentary and her handwriting was illegible. Even though these are warning signs for dyslexia, her teachers encouraged us to wait and see, telling me that it was too early to screen for dyslexia and that my daughter was too smart to be dyslexic. As she progressed into first and second grade, we continued to raise our concerns for dyslexia with her teachers, and Lillian continued to fall behind until one teacher finally admitted to me that my daughter had not fallen far enough behind to qualify for any kind of testing or intervention through the school system, and that it could be years before she did, because she is very smart and had learned little compensation tricks. We waited on a waiting list for 5 months and paid $1,200 to have her privately evaluated by a licensed clinical psychologist. Although she was in the spring of her second grade year, she tested at a beginning first grade reading level. And all of her diagnostic tests were consistent with dyslexia. Sorry.
It's okay. Just take a breath.
Because her teachers couldn't and the school district wouldn't help my daughter, I learned how to tutor her myself. With this style of Orton-Gillingham tutoring, Lillian and I have spent over 400 hours working together to close the gap and maintain her reading above grade level. My proudest moments are when I catch her reading just for fun, and I wish I could go back in time and erase those years of daily homework and reading struggles that left her feeling stupid and unable to relate to her peers. Dyslexia has a very strong genetic component, and at the time of Lillian's evaluation, my younger son, Nate, was 5 1/2. We considered his warning signs, which included late speech development. He often mixed up syllables within a word, and he had a hard time with the concept of rhyme. I started tutoring him at the same time I started working with his sister, and he's learned to read solely through this method. We had him privately evaluated a few months ago at the beginning of his first grade year, and he tested at a mid-second grade reading level, a year and a half above his current grade. Unfortunately, my son Nate is a rarity, a dyslexic who reads above grade level and who has no idea what it feels like to be behind, to struggle, or be ashamed. But there's no reason why all dyslexic kids cannot be like Nate. Identified early and supplied with appropriate research-based intervention before they fall behind. I hope you'll consider our story and the future of 20% of Oregon's children with your support for Senate Bill 612.
Hello, my name is Will Andrews. Next month I'll be 59 years old, and I've dealt with being dyslexic all of my life. Little odds and end jobs I didn't had all my life. I always thought I was dumb. I graduated from high school, I don't know how. I always thought to myself that I would want to fix myself. And if I wasn't in the school system, I'm a campus monitor at Westview, I wouldn't have never ran into Carolyn. And she helped me. I paid and everything. I go to her house. She came to my house. I worked overtime to try to fix me. I've always thought I was dumb. I can read a little bit. But when I got with Carolyn, my confidence got a little bit more better. I didn't know anything about being dyslexic. I didn't know until Carolyn told me. I always thought I was just a dumb guy. But when I got with the school system, I got Carolyn, and I'm a little bit more confident. And I'd like to see you guys pass this bill so kids like Gavin don't have to live like me. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Thank you. So next we will have Gwen Skinner, Annette Pritchard, Christy Satterelli. Satterella? Yeah. Oh. Where is he? And representative? Oh, yeah. Representative McLean?
No, sir. I don't want to testify.
You sure?
Just happy to be here.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because I had not seen you, but so other people had. Okay. Okay. That's good. Okay. Go right ahead. Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Gwen Skinner. I'm both a parent of a 10-year-old daughter who is dyslexic, and the experience that I had with my daughter mirrors exactly the experience that the prior speaker who sat on the far right had. But I'm here today in my role as a law professor who has gathered statistics in trying to understand the connection between children who have learning disabilities or learning differences like dyslexia and those in the correction system. So I'm only going to really talk about statistics and the cost to society that we bear by not addressing the issue of dyslexia. And I'm always hesitant to talk about these statistics, especially with kids in the room, because I do not want to suggest at all that having dyslexia means that someone is going to end up in the prison system or end up homeless. Because certainly, especially for those children that are here, they have the intervention that they need to be the productive and really brilliant students that they're going to be. But I do want to share some statistics. Statistics show that a significant majority of the prison and juvenile population suffers from learning disabilities or differences such as dyslexia. New statistics suggest that a large majority of homeless, underemployed, and unemployed also have such learning differences. Millions of students are of average to high intelligence, have learning differences, which are sometimes characterized as learning disabilities, including dyslexia, and are never diagnosed or treated. We heard a lot about that here today. These students typically employ one of three strategies if they don't have the intervention and support they need. They either escape and eventually drop out of school. They act out because they'd rather be bad or funny or than stupid. And they often are expelled or suffer the consequences of repeated disciplinary action. Or they become depressed and anxious, which oftentimes leads to self-medication through alcohol or drugs, which can lead to or exacerbate other mental health conditions. These students oftentimes are labeled as lazy and often bear the brunt of abuse at school and at home. The cost to society, let alone the cost to the human being whose full potential is not being met, is significant. Costs of prisons and the correction system, unemployment costs, homelessness, and the fact that these individuals, who are often of high intelligence, are not being allowed to contribute to society to their fullest potential. A few more statistics.
We're getting close to
Okay, 85% of juvenile offenders have been found to have reading disabilities like dyslexia. It's estimated that 60% of America's prison inmates are illiterate, and approximately 75% of those incarcerated demonstrated learning disabilities early in life. It is time that we do right by these children. With this legislation, we can take one step toward ensuring that students can achieve their full potential and that society can benefit from their creativity, wisdom, and brilliance. I have other statistics that I have added to my written testimony.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Annette Pritchard. My youngest son, David, is 18 and a senior at Cleveland High School in Portland. He has severe dyslexia. In the first grade in the Oregon City School District, testing revealed a discrepancy between his normal IQ and his poor classroom performance. We were told repeatedly we could not use the word dyslexia at our IEP meetings because it is not an eligible disability under Oregon law. We learned that although David clearly needed a different reading instruction approach, there was no provision in the law to provide materials and instruction specific to the D word. We struggled on trying to maintain David's self-confidence and love of learning. By third grade at Redland Elementary, David came home each day, his eyes welling with tears. And again each morning waiting for the school bus. His doctor diagnosed him as clinically depressed. I researched options, tutors, special teaching materials, alternative schools, but we couldn't afford them. Our insurance refused interventions, stating it was an educational issue, while the schools refused because there's no law requiring it. We worked at home, took classes at a charter school, and attended Ogden Middle School, but the struggle to read continued. In the summer after eighth grade, we moved to Portland. His case manager there put him on a modified diploma against our wishes. She said it was the law. It took me several weeks of investigating to find that was not true. Reluctantly, I engaged the services of a special education attorney. Some things started falling into place. He was back on a standard diploma, and the school staff, including a new case manager, started cooperating to see that his accommodations were met. The district technology specialist provided tools to assist him. That was helpful, but it still doesn't directly address his dyslexia. A handout at a PPS budget meeting last week is all full of all statistics, and it has graphs showing the number of students failing to meet third grade benchmarks and the high school dropout rate in the district around 25-30%. And what's the rate of dyslexia in our student population? What's missing is that statistic. Early detection, effective intervention for dyslexia could finally start to help this population of students who have never been served in Oregon schools. Our son experienced the anguish and degradation dyslexic students feel from teachers and peers. Depression and frustration are what they learn the most about in Oregon schools. I was able to spend time monitoring, advocating, and working with our son, although we didn't have the resources to provide the materials and instruction that would have helped him even more. He will graduate on time this June with a standard diploma. Passage and implementation of this bill will put a large number of talented and capable Oregon students on a firmer track to success for themselves and for the future of our state.
Thank you very much.
Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Christy Scattarella, and I'm the founder and executive director of the Shadow Project, and that's Oregon's only nonprofit that partners with special education teachers to close the achievement gap for children with dyslexia and other learning challenges. Over the past decade, we've empowered hundreds of teachers to help nearly 8,000 struggling students succeed. And we at the Shadow Project believe passage of Senate Bill 612 is critical. And I was going to say give you three reasons why, but now I'm going to make it two. Okay. Oregon's goal is for 100% graduation. And right now, two-thirds of third graders in special education for conditions such as dyslexia are not meeting state benchmarks for reading, and that quadruples their risk of school dropout. Well, that's a pretty disturbing statistic, but imagine or recall being one of those kids. So let me take you inside a special education classroom for a moment. This is a group of fourth graders, and they're about to meet a role model from the Shadow Project for the first time.
Oh, you can hold it back. You don't have to be that close.
Okay. they're about to meet a role model from the Shadow Project for the first time. And this is a young woman, a senior in high school. And she has ADD, she has dyslexia, and she is on track to graduate. And these kids have never met anyone like her. So what questions do you suppose they ask her? Well, I'm going to give you a sample. Do you ever get scared or have panic attacks? Do you try to hide from stuff at school? What helps you get through the day? Do you ever hate school or run away from it? And then there's Josh. Now, he's a third grader who finally confessed to his teacher, "I'm so stupid, I wish I'd never been born." I think all of us in this room have seen what happens to kids when schools are not equipped for them. And I've also seen what happens when they are, and it's pretty amazing. Research tells us that a teacher's effectiveness has more impact on student outcomes than anything else under the control of the school system. We must give teachers the tools to identify and support children whose biggest risk is giving up, or these kids are just going to keep giving up, like Talia almost did. Now, Talia was a third grader, and whenever it came time to read or write, Talia would pick a fight, often punch someone, get sent to the principal's office, and often get suspended. And what nobody recognized about Talia is that she was unable to write her own name. When Talia was finally diagnosed and given to a well-equipped teacher, she became, in her own words, she became a star student. She began reading her way through the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, and I can tell you that she signs her name with a flourish.
We're gonna have to hurry. It's been about time, so soon.
Okay. Well, I'll finish up by saying that I will always be inspired by a second grade boy who has ADD, dyslexia, and was in special education. And it would take him half an hour to write a sentence. He would sit at his desk, and he would grip his pencil so hard it would tear through the paper, and he would talk about giving up. Today, that boy is a college graduate with a good job, and he volunteers to help kids like him. And I know this boy because he is my son. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you all. Next, we will have Emery Roberts, Alisa Roberts, and Teresa Sorensen.
Teresa's already.
Oh, pardon?
I was already up there.
Oh, sorry about that. He was listed twice.
Sorry.
Lori Howard. Is Lori here? Do you want to come up?
Sure.
And I should put on deck so we know who's coming up next, so I'll get this right. Desiree Wolcourt Cushman, Susan Farmer, and Kathy, is it Wyrick?
Yes.
Okay. You'll be up next. Go ahead. Whoever wants to start.
Oh, hi, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Emery Roberts, and I'm a junior at Lincoln High School. First, I'd like to say I love learning. I love getting new information, but school has always been difficult for me as long as I can remember, and I've always been just shy of what I really wanted to achieve. I remember in kindergarten, when we were going through the beginning level books, and we'd test on them, and everyone would pass, and I wouldn't, and I kept on taking the test, and I kept on failing, and I didn't know why. And it was really frustrating to me, and I felt a lot of shame, and I felt inferior to all the other kids, and I felt like they had a club that they were all a part of, and the teacher was a part of, and I wasn't a part of it. Later, third grade or so, the phrase sustained silent reading filled me with dread. My classmates would all be sitting there reading their large chapter books, and I'd be staring at the same small book, just looking at the pictures and coming up with my own stories. The upside of this activity was that it helped me with my own imagination, which I now know is one of the strengths of my dyslexia. Creativity was also used in my spelling. My mother did not appreciate this. And she would have me sit at the table and practice writing out my spelling words over and over again until there were calluses on my fingers. And then I'd take the test, and when I'd get a word wrong, I'd sneak a pencil into my hand and I'd correct it. And I felt so much shame with that, and I didn't want anyone to notice. And I had way too much, I knew the feeling of shame too much for a child that young. A kid in third grade should not know exactly how it feels to be that bad at something. By the fourth grade, I resorted to putting my head down on the desk and crying every day. And that was when I was diagnosed. And my mom had been asking since first grade, but the teachers had kept on reassuring her that I would eventually get it, that it would click. When they told me about the diagnosis, it actually made me feel better, because I'd always felt like I wasn't capable of what I knew I could do, what I knew I wanted to do, and what I felt I was smart enough to do, and dyslexia gave me an explanation why. And then for 2 years, I worked with an Ornegillium dyslexia specialist, and I was lucky my parents could afford this, and not everyone can, and she was a lifesaver. She believed in me, and she thought I was smart, and of course she didn't cure my dyslexia, but she gave me the tools that I needed in order to be successful, and that's why I'm able to do what I do in school. I wouldn't be able to do that without those 2 years. In high school, I started struggling again, and I started feeling inferior. I started feeling like I couldn't do it, and I was accused of a new word, which was lazy. This hurt worse than stupid, because I know I'm not stupid. I can argue against that. I know that it's not true. But lazy, I started having doubts. Maybe I'm not working as hard as I can. Maybe that's true. And I thought, eventually, there must be other students that feel that way. So I started the Dyslexic Student Union, which is dyslexic students as long as students without dyslexia. And we come together and we talk about it. We talk about the issues. And part of that is getting more people involved in things like this. And that's what I went through to have my education accessible to me. And that should not be required. That should not be what's required of every student with dyslexia in order to make their education accessible to them. Education should be free from shame and accessible to everyone. I don't blame my teachers. Not the teachers who said I was lazy, not the teachers who said that I would grow out of it, not the teachers who still question my extra time and accommodations, not the teachers that imply I'm not working hard or that I'm not applying myself because I can talk well but I can't turn in a paper, and I don't blame my mom for pushing me so hard. Because the truth is, they did what they thought was best, and they didn't know any better. It's not their fault. They don't, to this day, have the information they need to make an informed decision. And it's not your fault, but it is a problem, and it's a problem with a solution. And this bill is a part of that solution. Thank you.
I will say that for me in spelling, what I did was when they finally told me in, I think, third or fourth grade, there were silent E's, I gave up.
Yes.
And I decided to put a squiggle on the end of every word. I told all my teachers, if you need an E, it is. If it isn't, it's just some decoration on the end of every word. So, yeah, I mean, anyway.
Chair Roblin.
Yes.
Just on that creativity, I met with a school board member that is dyslexic, and she told me when she was in high school, She used her creativity to get through her book reports. She just always wrote the report on the same book. So she told me about all these reports, and I finally said, well, what was the book? And she says, it didn't exist. I just made it up. I just kept writing this report, and it was never wrong because none of the teachers could ever find the book. And as an adult, she now plans to write the book.
Yes.
Thank you. That's close enough. Sure, thanks. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Alicia Roberts-Frank, and I am the Special Education Program Director at Lewis and Clark College. At the beginning of my career, I was trained in Slingerland. Sorry, I've cut a lot, so I'm trying to be respectful of time.
Thank you.
I was trained in Slingerland, a classroom adaptation of the Orton-Gillingham approach for teaching students with dyslexia. Since then, I have taught elementary students, middle school and high school students, but most importantly, I've taught pre-service and in-service teachers who knew very little about the basic building blocks of English and whose eyes were opened by the small pieces of knowledge that can be overwhelmingly empowering to students who are learning to read. Since arriving in Oregon over a year and a half ago, I have been approached by general education teachers, special education teachers, reading specialists, and speech pathologists who want to learn more. They recognize that they lack the tools to meet the needs of their students who do not know how to read and write, and who need an explicit approach. The teachers themselves have never been taught syllable types, syllable division rules, or the influence of history and meaning on spelling. I have met countless parents who have undergone tremendous financial and relational hardships in order to prevent their children from failing school or to repair the educational and emotional damage done by well-meaning educators who either did not believe that there was a problem with their children's learning or were ineffective in the remediation. Parents have mortgaged homes, moved, lived separately from family members in order to pay for private tutoring, private schools, or homeschool. While I am frustrated for those parents and the length to which these parents have had to go to ensure their children can learn to read and write, I am more frustrated by the thought of the number of parents who cannot afford to do so. The number of students reading below grade level, in every grade level, is staggering. The number of incarcerated individuals who cannot read or write is even more so. Literacy is a social equity issue, but one that we can effectively address. Neurological science and decades of successful experiences have provided the keys to unlocking literacy for everyone. Those keys now need to be copied and disseminated to all literacy teachers, those who work in general education classrooms, as well as those who remediate in reading centers and in special education programs. Senate Bill 612 can help ensure that all teachers learn to teach all children to read and write, and that all students receive the instruction they need. Thank you for your support.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Lori Howard, and I'm a mother of two dyslexic boys in the Beaverton School District. And my brother is dyslexic, and I myself am dyslexic, so it does run in families. I'll never forget, at a young age, watching my mother cry as she read a report from the school about my brother, this was in 1970s, that he was mentally retarded. And I remember thinking, but my brother knows so much. He can do these amazing things, and he's so creative. And I felt like family gave up on him. I felt like teachers gave up on him. My brother is now in the Oregon State Prison. I feel that a lot of what has transpired in his life was due to him not having the confidence or feeling that he was smart enough and that he was not able to get through school. Now we know more about dyslexia, and we know there are tools out there that work, and it's sad for me to see that they are not implemented in the school systems. I've spent over $1,000 of my own money to try and learn methodologies to help my children, and a lot of time and effort on helping my kids, my children's teachers understand dyslexia and help empower my children to speak for themselves. So it would be really great for this bill to be supported. Thank you.
Thank you. My brother has been in and out of prison as well, who has much more severe dyslexia than I had. So I think that's another thing that sometimes we don't wish to share, but it's getting through the system without and self-medicating becomes another problem with a lot of these.
Exactly.
With a lot of these kids, because they feel like they need some, especially if they have a little bit of ADHD with the,
yes,
yeah,
which so, he does.
So again, thank you. I don't see any questions. Thank you all.
Thank you.
So Desiree Walcott Cushman, Susan Farmer, and Kathy Wyrick. Did I get everybody right that I was thinking? Okay.
Hi.
Okay.
Can I start? Hi, Chair and fellow committee members. My name is Desiree Walcott Cushman. I'm a library assistant at Multnomah County Library. I'm going to be really quiet because I'm really excited to be next to these wonderful people that are next to me, and I want to hear what they have to say. As we know, it's inherited. Dyslexia is inherited, and my family definitely won the genetic lottery pool. I have three boys that are dyslexic and one who's ADHD. We struggle with reading all the time. My first son wasn't identified as being dyslexic until high school. Everyone knew he had a problem. We struggled with IEPs, we struggled with accommodations, and finally we had this magical moment where we went to this great school that had a connection with the Blosser Center, which is a multisensory approach to reading. Brian was given a scholarship to be tested for dyslexia, and oh my gosh, this aha moment happened, and then we were able to help his younger brother who was in first grade, and his even younger brother who was in preschool at the time. Early screening, really, it made a huge difference. I see the difference between Brian, who's now in college and still struggling to read, but he has these great accommodations. He knows how to advocate for himself. And my son, Keelan, who's now in high school and is reading he's reading at a fifth grade level now, but let me tell you, that's not bad, because I think he would be illiterate without accommodations and intervention. So I just want to plead with you to support Senate Bill 612, early screening education for educators and qualified specialists in the schools. It would make a world of difference. And I've left a testimony.
Thank you.
Testimony.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, Senate Committee on Education members, I'm Susan Farmer, a licensed teacher specializing in dyslexia, and I'm in favor of 612. My credentials are listed on the testimony copy you have. My teaching degree became worthless when I couldn't even teach my youngest daughter to read. I desperately consumed myself with time to figure out why. Then I approached the school about her dyslexia. They claimed they knew what they were doing, yet admitted they had no dyslexia training. My advocacy for her fell on deaf ears. Although I later proved in a hearing that Salem-Keizer denied her appropriate public education, their relenting resistance to my advocacy was so severe, my only recourse was court. After years of litigating, the school district's legal cost likely reached a seven-figure total. Staff training in dyslexia would have been far cheaper and productive. I attended graduate school at Western Oregon 7 years ago. When I mentioned dyslexia in class, I was told schools don't use that term. This program is what trains our current special education teachers. The word dyslexia is in both federal and Oregon law. I cited on your copy, which says, I quote, specific learning disability includes conditions such as, and dyslexia is listed. No doubt, each of you has a relative or a friend, with breast cancer. It affects 1 in 8 women. Dyslexia affects 1 in 5, both genders. Statistically, a classroom of 25 children has 1 to 2 females who will later develop breast cancer and 5 children with lifetime dyslexia. Roughly 1 in 5 will also be a victim of child sex abuse. In comparing these statistics, it's easier to see how widespread dyslexia is, yet schools know nothing. Teachers have mandatory training in bullying, sexual harassment, and child abuse. We owe this bill to Oregon's children and teachers to cease confusion and blatant disregard of dyslexia. Lastly, I would like to suggest amending Section 1B to add school and ESD early intervention speech language pathologists to the list of teachers requiring this training. Any dyslexia specialist here in elsewhere knows that one of the very first warning signs of dyslexia is delayed language and or speech problems. The speech language pathologist is often the very first professional that a dyslexic child ever comes in contact with. I now devote my time to dyslexics by tutoring and advocating for them. The stress and emotions my family has endured, my daughter has endured, should never have to be going through a family like this. I sincerely appreciate your time, and the statistics I've provided are documented in your copy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello. Hello. Hi, thank you for taking my testimony today. My name is Kathy Weirich. I'm the director of the Blosser Center for Dyslexia Resources in Portland, Oregon. And my story is like pretty much the same song, second verse. I got into this because of my daughter who failed kindergarten. And, well, anyway, it took over my life. So I went back to school and got a master's in special ed because I figured they would teach me what I needed to know. And they didn't teach me what I needed to know. So I searched, and I was lucky enough to find a program that taught Orton-Gillingham approach. And so I did that, and Dorothy Blosser Whitehead, who just passed away anyway, she had started this in the Beaverton Public Schools in the 1970s. So we've been training teachers and tutors since the 1970s, actually, as the Blosser Center since 2000. And so we do the Orton-Gillingham approach. That's the basis of all the other processes. It's the foundation. I have a technical issue that I'd like to talk about mostly. We're the only accredited place in the state, or well, on the West Coast, actually, to learn Orton-Gillingham, classic Orton-Gillingham. And there's a problem that maybe you can fix in this bill, or there's something that concerns me, which is, it says Section 1, something rather 2, Department of Education shall designate a dyslexia specialist. So my concern is dyslexia specialist could mean anything to anybody. And so there are 5 nonprofit accrediting bodies in the United States. And so is there a way to get into the law that anybody who is working for the state as the dyslexia specialist needs could be accredited or certified? And I'd written this out too. Either the Academy of Orton-Gillingham Practitioners and Educators, Academic Language Therapy Association, International Dyslexia Association has an accrediting thing, Slingerland Institute has accreditation, and the International Multisensory Language Education Council has accreditation too. So that's what I'd like you to consider.
Thank you very much. And yes, we can consider it. So we'll.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. You're okay. No questions. Kathy Helgeson, Shelby Park, and John McAdder. And I should have had Helga up, Kathy up first, just because you're farthest away. But I apologize for that.
That's okay.
I missed that check.
My 4 grandkids here are like, oh my gosh, how long are we doing this? Am I the only one?
Well, there's a couple others could be on their way.
That's okay. I'll take their time.
Okay, you guys. So Shelby Park and John McAdder, and they may be in the other room coming this way.
Yeah.
So.
Do you want me to start?
You can start.
Okay.
And here he comes.
So
I am a school improvement specialist who works with schools that are focused on priority, that are the lowest 15% of the state. And
do say your name.
Sorry. Kathy Helgeson.
Thank you.
And so as a school improvement specialist, I'm assigned to low-achieving schools that are in the bottom 15%, and my job is to help them change to be more successful with students. And I will tell you, dyslexia doesn't even come into the conversation. In fact, I tried to talk to someone, and they were like, really? You know, I mean, come on. You know, I could tell you our personal story about my granddaughter and the same troubles in school, the same hard line by the school, this doesn't exist. In fact, they went one step further to call the police to have us escorted off the campus. I think you might find it amazing that a school would say, this is a medical problem. We don't deal with this kind of thing. This, you need to see your doctor about this. That's like saying your child who's blind or deaf or needs a walker, that's a medical problem. We just tell them try harder here. They suggest you get treatment, like it's a disease. But it's not a disease. It is mostly it's a learning style. It's not even a disability until you go to school, and then it becomes that. So people have talked about the shame that you feel. I feel that the shame is on the professionals who will not recognize the science, the brain science, about what is truly happening with a dyslexic student. And, those 2 minutes go fast. and usually the interventions are with a partner or someone else that you're dependent on. And one thing we're really pushing is for our granddaughter to have the technology. And the technology will allow her, well, in fact, she did go from reading Magic Treehouse books to Where the Red Fern Grows, just because we were able to get Learning Ally for her, where she could listen instead of read. But the school doesn't recognize that, and AR is a problem because they're not getting their points legitimately. That's cheating. Just that the potential is lost. It's amazing the amount of potential that is just lost because we don't have a system in place. And I was going to say about my brother who was in third grade in 1959 in Coos Bay School District.
Yeah.
The teacher wrote, if David wants to learn to read, he's just going to have to try a whole lot harder. And in that time, we can forgive them because they didn't know better. But in this day and age, it's malpractice. People know better, and when they know better, they need to do better. And just in closing, there's no downside to this bill. It's the things that we already have in place. It's the things we say we already do. We have the technology. We have so much in place we simply don't use. And it's not one more thing on the plate, and it's not about being a teacher of the future. It's about being a modern teacher in 2015. And it levels the playing field and allows students to show their knowledge, because the way we let them show their knowledge has a huge bearing on their ability to do so. So I feel this is really a mainstream issue, and it needs to be in place for all students. And I urge you to move this forward, because the students are waiting. Thank you.
My report card in fifth grade was a D in spelling this time and an F in writing, because I can't read his writing well enough to know if he spelled it wrong. I'll switch it around the next time.
solid block of D's. Not
good.
One positive comment ever.
Yeah, I was a different school district, but yes.
I think you're next.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Shelby Park, and I'm the president of the Oregon branch of the International Dyslexic Association. So I ran from upstairs.
Thanks.
And as an organization, we've been fighting for a very, very long time to get dyslexia recognized. And what it comes down to is our universities are not teaching teachers. And until our teachers recognize dyslexia, know about dyslexia, we're kind of stuck. Our kids need to be screened, but in order to be screened, our teachers need to know what they're screening for. I come into this, I have a daughter who's a college student. I was able to pay for tutoring. I tutor now also. And one of the things that really gets to me is we have fourth and third graders wanting to kill themselves because they are desperate. And all they're getting is that they're not at benchmark, They're taking these tests, and we really need to change this. So it's an organization we really, really, really need our universities to teach about dyslexia.
Thank you.
I should have gone first. Can you hear that?
You don't need to be that close, actually. You can be away. It picks it up really easily.
Because that's essentially what I wanted to say, that we not only have to give the teachers the tools, we have to require the teachers to have the tools. In about 1945, my younger brother was in the first grade in Massachusetts, and he was kept back twice by his first grade teacher because he couldn't read. He had a tough life after that. And given that date, perhaps there's some excuse that she didn't know, but we don't have any excuse today. My wife has become a dyslexia therapist on her own initiative.
Even farther away.
Farther away?
Yeah.
On her own initiative. And when she was choosing her school, we got in touch with Western Oregon. And I was told by someone in the department that we don't really have a course to help her become a dyslexia specialist or therapist, but she could take the master's course, and for her thesis, she could study about dyslexia by herself. That would be. Well, she ended up going to the University of Southampton in England, where they had a very good course. She went there for a year and came back, and she's busy as a therapist now. I mentioned my brother. My sister's oldest daughter came close to suicide, and it turned out that it was because she was being forced to read out loud, as all of the students were, and she couldn't do it. And the embarrassment brought her to that point. My wife was telling me that she went to one of these IEP meetings recently here in Oregon this past couple of weeks, which is a meeting when a student is recognized as having trouble. And the learning disabilities teacher, the special education teacher was one of the people who attended the meeting. And afterwards he said, could you tell me a good place I could go to learn about dyslexia? That's pretty bad. So we have to build in the necessity to know this and to know what to do about it in the certification processes of the universities and, of course, of the students.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Thank you very much. That's everyone who has signed up that was on our sign-up lists. I appreciate all the testimony. In our committee, we will hear a bill one day before we move it. It's going to happen on a different day so that people can get to us. And we did have a couple expressions of the possibility and need of amendments. So that also is part of the process. So we'll keep you informed. You can look on our website at the Capitol to find out when it gets how we move forward. So, and if you have questions, don't hesitate to call us. So with that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 612. I almost did it again. And looking at time, do you think we have? Yeah, I think we'll do the work sessions fairly quickly if there's any problem with that. So we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 657, and we'll have a short explanation by our administrator about the bill and then explain what we're doing.
Chair Rovlin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 657 appropriates monies to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for the Agriculture
experiment station and branch stations, extension service, and forest research laboratory programs of Oregon State University. This bill has no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued, and we are not considering amendments at this time.
And it is going to Ways and Means.
It is going to Ways and Means.
Because it does definitely have an impact. So with that, Senator Canope, do you wish to...
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 657 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 657 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, it is... passed and sent on to Ways and Means. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 657. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 135, and we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 135 allows the Department of Education to pay for the costs of the education of students in eligible day and residential treatment programs by making grants and aid to the districts where the programs are located. This bill has no subsequent referral. A minimal impact has been issued for the Dash 2 amendments, and there's no revenue impact for the Dash 2 amendments. We're considering the Dash 2 amendments at this time.
So this one is one that allows for the policy, and then we'll still have to have Ways and Means figure out if they're going to fund it. But it gives a different way of paying for those high-cost people, so they just pay directly, which I actually think is a good idea. So with that, we'll have a...
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as presented.
Senator Canote moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. They're amended. I move Senate Bill. Okay. Now it's you again, isn't it?
Oh, you didn't ask if there's any opposition.
Oh, is there any opposition? Sorry about that. Thank you. Keep me honest.
Lee and I are just looking at each other going,
good to have a vice chair. Is there any objections? Not seeing none, it's passed. Now we'll go on to the next.
Close.
Thank you. I didn't want any objections. No.
That's not like you, Senator.
No, I know. I generally accept those kinds of things, so thank you.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 135 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 135 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. So moved. Who wants to carry this bill? We could have Senator Gelser. No. I'm just giving you a bad time.
Sure.
You want, okay, it's a good bill. Yeah, Senator Gelser. It's a great bill, actually.
It's a day treatment bill, right?
I would also like, yes, the Dublin bill. That's a really nice thing. Would you wish to have us make a motion to let you vote on the
previous? She just did. She was here.
We already did.
You did you do the first one?
You didn't take a voice vote, so the whole committee voted.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah.
Does that count, even though I
no.
wasn't here?
Do you
yes.
wish to?
Yeah.
Okay. They're saying it does. I would be glad to ask for your... without objection, to ask for her vote on Senate Bill.
I think that's a good idea. It might be
657, which has to do with the extensions.
Yes, I would very much like to vote on
Is there
that.
Any objection to Senator?
No, I don't no. know.
How do you vote?
I vote yes.
Okay.
Bill Beavs.
Senator,
in case I want to
Senator Gelser votes yes. Okay, that takes care of our those businesses, and we have some time. I mean, this one should be fairly easy to explain. There are a few people to talk. We may not get to everybody, but we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 287. And we'll have a short explanation while that's happening. Aaron Haig, Wendy Gutner, and Jenna Ingram. Who else? Who wants? Okay. Where's it go here? Okay.
Let's start with the first three.
So is that Andy McMillan, Martin Fisher, and Happy? Come on up. Is that Marshall? Marshall? There we go. We got it. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 287 deletes the provision that authorizes teachers who are licensed and endorsed by the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission to practice speech-language pathology without obtaining a license from the State Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. This bill has no subsequent referral. It may have a fiscal statement, but a statement has not been issued at this time. There's no revenue impact, and we're not considering amendments at this time.
Very good. Okay. Now we have the right people at the table. Thank you. And whoever wants to start can.
Chair Roblin, my name is Dr. Martin Fisher. I'm the director of the School of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Pacific University, and I've been a speech-language pathologist for 35 years. The directors and the faculty of Oregon's three graduate programs in speech-language pathology at Pacific University, Portland State University, and the University of Oregon strongly support universal licensure for speech-language pathologists in the state of Oregon as envisioned in the passage and implementation of Senate Bill 287. We feel that the passage of this bill will have a significant positive impact on the training of students and the care of individuals with communication disorders. By ensuring that all speech-language pathologists practicing in Oregon meet one high set of standards implemented by the Oregon Board of Examiners in Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology, we ensure that all speech-language and hearing services provided in the state of Oregon are of consistent quality across ages and locations. The move to universal licensure is consistent with national trends, and if passed, will bring Oregon in line with the majority of states. We find no downside to this move and offer our full support.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll have everybody speak first and then questions. So.
My name is Andy McMillan, and I represent Portland State University. I've been a practicing speech-language pathologist for 15 years, and I'm also currently the president of the Oregon Speech-Language Hearing Association, so I'll be up here when when OSHA provides its testimony in a moment also. I'm here primarily to offer support. The three Oregon programs have collaborated on the statement that Dr. Fisher presented, so I stand with Portland State as a member of the Portland State University faculty in support of the statement from Dr. Fisher.
Thank you.
My name is Margaret Meyer-McGinney, and I'm with the University of Oregon, and I'm also a speech-language pathologist for many years, and I just want to express my support for this bill and...
Very good. Thank you very much. Any questions for the doctors? Thank you very much. So next we have Ryan, is it Bolson, Aaron Haig, and Ashley Northam.
I think it's Wendy Gunter.
Where did I get Wendy? Oh, I had called you earlier. Come on up, Wendy. Yes.
Yes, I think Aaron and I will probably be last because okay. We represent the Board of Examiners.
Perfect.
So we're going with Ashley.
Sure.
Musical chair.
We'll get this all eventually. We've got a lot of names down here.
Senator Roblin.
We'll take whatever order you think is right.
Perfect. I'm Senator Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Ashley Northam. I'm a past president of the Oregon Speech and Hearing Association and have been a practicing speech pathologist for over 15 years. I'm here representing the Oregon Speech and Hearing Association and entering testimony on their behalf. The Oregon OSHA, or the Oregon Speech and Hearing Language and Hearing Association, is a professional organization representing more than 2,200 speech-language pathologists and audiologists in the state of Oregon. They have a position statement regarding this bill that states a speech-language pathologist who has met the highest standards of training prescribed by the profession and obtained through a graduate program accredited by the American Speech-Language Hearing Association is eligible for a profession-based license to practice in any setting with individuals from birth to death. Postgraduate continuing education experiences must be focused on the ongoing development of the professional in the practice of speech-language pathology. Any license must encompass all of these requirements. OSHA supports a single profession-based license for speech-language pathologists to practice in any venue. This license must encompass achievement from the highest standards of education and training and continuing professional education prescribed by the national standards designed for and accepted by the profession.
OSHA is dedicated to ensuring that those who have met the highest standards to the practice of these professions are providing best practice intervention services to allow Oregonians with communication disorders to reach their full potential in the home, school, and community. The scope of practice for speech-language pathology is very wide, encompassing necessary clinical skills to serve clients, patients, and students from birth to death, incorporating diagnostics and therapeutic services from a wide range of disorders and disabilities. This is a changing profession that must adapt to new research and innovation outcomes from a continual source of science-based methodologies. As such, the practicing members of speech-language pathology must acquire continuing education in the field to best serve the public and adapt to changes for best practices in the profession. Individuals that practice in a wide variety of clinical settings as well as schools, and there has been two licenses in the state through the Oregon Board of Examiners as well as through TSBC, and there's been a number of confusion in those areas because there's been different standards set forth. OSHA is very much in support of having one license because it would really unify the standard best practices set forth by the members that are practicing in any venue, whether our individuals come from schools, the same students that are in schools go to clinics and hospitals. We should all be working at the same level of practice and have the same continuing education requirements and educational requirements. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Andy McMillan. I'm the current president of the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association, and I've been a longtime board member of the organization. Several years ago, I was part of a standards practice review committee that OSHA put together. And as a part of this, we went across the state and held a series of town halls in multiple municipalities. Designed to bring practicing speech-language pathologists into the conversation about what licensure would look like. And our results from that series of town halls was decisively in favor that speech-language pathologists, whether they're practicing in school-based settings or in medical-based settings, are strongly in favor of universal licensure in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So Vicki Chamberlain, and who were the other two people? Wendy? Yeah, all three of you. There's room for all three of you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, the Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I just have a few comments. We worked for years with the Board of Examiners to come to this license. The SLP profession grew out of education, but we no longer are training people to be teachers for communication disorders. This is an appropriate move. We agreed to grandfather the existing teachers that have been trained to be teachers and let their licenses die out, and all new folks would be licensed by the board. The commission voted unanimously to support Senate Bill 287.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Yes. My name is Wendy Gunter. I'm a speech-language pathologist and current vice chair of the Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. Okay. This is, of course, our bill, so we're in support of it because we've been working on it since 2008. It does reflect the cooperation of stakeholders, including what Andy referred to in the summer of 2010. We, as an agency, participated in the town halls held across the state. In October 2010, we engaged with the profession at their annual conference and have done so ever since to elicit feedback from current licensees in both agencies to make sure that we were addressing all of the concerns that were present. We've had multi-agency meetings with ODE, TSPC, OSHA to really brainstorm solutions and to really safeguard against any possible downsides of this move. And then we've had ongoing small groups as well, including one-on-one meetings between Sandy Liebold, our past executive director, and Vicki Chamberlain of TSPC, since those were the primary agencies.
So the benefits include it improves the consistency of the licensing requirements across the state so that there are no longer discrepancies. It puts the Board of Examiners as the sole regulatory authority, which is actually what you've asked us to do anyways. And it aligns the licensing process with the current scope of practice of speech-language pathologists. And really the primary motivation is it increases the quality of care across the continuum rather than having discrepancies in training or licensure requirement or continuing ed. So for all of those above reasons, we anticipate only positive benefits and have no known risks.
Thank you very much.
I'm Erin Haig, the Executive Director of the Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology, and I have nothing really to add other than there is not a fiscal impact other than possibly a positive one for our board, but we can definitely absorb the new licensees without a problem and continue our good customer service that we're providing in our turnaround and helping out the licensees as well as the public.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. That's all we have to do. Okay. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak to this bill who is in the audience that didn't get a chance? Because we had a few people sign up, but I think they were from the group before. They just got on the wrong list. So just wanted to make sure. With that, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 287. And as I had told the people in the last one, and you may or may not have been here, we usually let it sit for a week or so in case we hear of anything, and then we'll put it up for a work session at some point in the future, fairly soon. And watch the announcements and you'll see when it comes up. So with that, any other business that anybody has that wants to make a statement for? Seeing none, we're going to close the Committee of Senate Education. Thank you, Senator Cruz.
Hey, Ernie.
Yes.
I got Ernie.
Yes.
I got
Senator Cruz.